It was in the reign of Charles the Simple that a whole army of the bold northern pirates who had so long ravaged the western coast of Europe was converted to the faith, though at the expense of the fairest jewel in the Frankish crown. Neustria, a rich and fertile province which they had overrun for nearly a century and had even forced to conform to the savage worship of their gods, was made over to them with the sovereignty of Britannia on condition that Rollo, their chief, whose progress through France had been marked by fire and blood, should become a Christian. The condition was accepted. The Norman pirate married a Carolvingian princess, who lived but a short time, and was thoroughly converted. Strangely enough, the religious element had been always strongest amongst these fierce Northmen, who several times sent presents and tapers to the very abbeys which they had come to pillage, when a storm rising at sea and sight of the holy place induced them to believe that the Christian sanctuary was guarded by some celestial power. The first question put by the Duke of Normandy to Franco, Archbishop of Rouen, who was instructing him in the mysteries of Christianity, was to ascertain who were the most renowned saints of France and Neustria. The prelate immediately named Our Lady, and enlarged upon her great power. "Well," said the Norman prince after a moment's pause, "as she is so powerful, we must do something for her." And he thereupon made a large concession of lands to Our Lady of Bayeux. The city of Rouen had dedicated to Mary its metropolitan church, burned by the Normans of Hastings, and repaired as well as possible some time after. The Duke was baptized therein with most of his Danish captains, and set on foot to enlarge and beautify it, works which his successors magnificently continued. Our Lady of Evreux, one of the most ancient churches of Normandy, if we believe the annals which relate that St. Taran, first bishop of Evreux, founded it about the year 250, and consecrated it to the worship of the true God under the invocation of the Blessed Virgin, likewise received rich gifts from Rollo, who gave, even to his last moments, the most signal marks of sincere devotion towards Madame Sainte Marie, as she was respectfully called by the princes and nobles of that period. These Norman dukes, by nature happy, generous, and brave, were in general very devout to the Virgin. It was before her altar that they were invested with the regalia of that fair duchy which they proudly styled their Kingdom of Normandy. And there it was, too, that they slept their last sleep, under the gray flags of her chapel, hung with tapestry of silk and gold, representing the principal events in the life of the Mother of God, and wrought by the Duchesses of Normandy. Robert the Magnificent had himself no less than 3 churches built in honor of Mary, and bearing her name, Our Lady of Deliverance, to accomplish a vow made during a storm whilst his bark was tossed about in the dangerous waters of the Norman Archipelago, Our Lady of Grace, near Honfleur, and finally, Our Lady of Pity, under the ducal castle which defended Honfleur. This prince, so devoted to Mary, resolved on going to Jerusalem to visit her tomb at the Holy Sepulchre. He set out on horseback, accompanied by the richest and noblest lords of his court, all radiant with gold, sparkling with jewels, and surrounded by a crowd of valets, squires, and pages, as though they were going to some great tournament. As they passed along, the people came forth in crowds to see them, and their entry into Rome was something remarkable. The Romans regarded with admiration these northern barbarians who made even Italy itself tremble, and whose tall stature and noble mien reminded them of their ancient heroes. Seeing their lordly bearing, their brilliant armor, their long gold-hilted swords, and their pointed helmets, whence their fair tresses escaped, they asked each other who were these princes from the north who came thus as humble pilgrims to visit the tombs of the apostles. The Pope gave them a distinguished reception, bestowed on them his pastoral blessing, and with his own hands placed the pilgrim's staff on the shoulder of their princely chief. Thence they continued their route to Constantinople, the city of Mary, where they dazzled with their magnificence. They scattered gold and pearls through the streets as they passed along. Robert's mule was shod with gold, and when a nail fell out, not a Norman deigned to stood in search of it. It was for the Greeks to gather from the dust the gold nails lost by the Norman's horse. On approaching the holy place, the Christian spirit made itself felt. Those same travelers who had crossed or braved, without acknowledging any right or toll, so many well-defended rivers and so many embattled walls, those bold companions who always took care to let the point of their swords be seen underneath the pilgrim's robe, they, who were so lately proud even to insolence, could now be scarcely recognized, so humble, so modest, so collected were they made by the mere proximity of that holy land, whose arid, rocky soil they trod barefoot. Robert, so justly styled the Magnificent, visited with the most edifying devotion the holy sepulchres of Jesus and Mary. Christians and Muslims alike received from him such munificent alms that the Emir of Jerusalem, excited to emulation, refused to accept the tribute due to him by these splendid pilgrims. Robert left a liberal donation at the Holy Sepulchre. Richard II, Duke of Normandy, had already made an offering there of 100 pounds of gold. The pilgrimage accomplished, the Duke set out by land on his return to his fair duchy, which he was never more to see. He died at Nice, in Bethania, jesting on the aspect of death, like the sea kings and his fathers, and commending himself to Madame Sainte Marie, as his Christian predecessors had done.